have a very special guest this morning. I'm very, very excited and proud and honored that he is with us today. He is a brilliant chemist who leads a team of researchers that are on the cutting edge of herbal remedies and especially the amazing healing qualities of the aloe vera plant. We met Doug Johnson years ago when Brian and I were seeking a company that could bring our product ideas to life. When we sat down with Doug and his team, we were very impressed with his knowledge, his understanding of what aloe can do, and his determination to formulate products that truly would be a breakthrough in skincare science. As an expert in understanding the healing qualities of our number one ingredient, which is aloe vera, Doug is the perfect guest speaker for our 10th anniversary celebration. We are so honored to have him here. And let's give him a warm welcome here at National Convention to share his expertise and knowledge, the distinguished chemist, Mr. Doug Johnson. Doug.
Thank you, Linda. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm from the great state of Texas, and I think there's a few people here from Texas. But I must tell you that I live about one-third of the year in the Mayan Riviera. So I spend about a third of my time in the Mayan Riviera and the rest of my time in Texas. So when I was seeing all the Mayan Riviera pictures this morning and hearing all the stories, well, that's my home. That's where I live, about 10 miles south of Xcaret. And most of you were probably there in Xcaret. So it is a pleasure to be in Milwaukee. This is my first time to Milwaukee. First time. I flew in yesterday on Midwest Airlines, and since I'm from Texas and American Airlines normally flies in and out of Texas a lot, I normally fly American Airlines. But my first time on Midwest, and guess what they gave me?
Cookies.
Two chocolate chip cookies. With American, you have to fly first class, and you only get one chocolate chip cookie. But as you know, there was a lot of storms, and the plane was a little bit late coming in, and I think some of the folks got stranded, I think, in Chicago and had trouble getting here. But our plane was late, and so I wanted to be here on time. So as soon as I got off the plane, I ran to the rental car area and got my rental car, got directions on how to get here, got on the highway, and shoop, off I went. And I got about 10 minutes from here, and all of a sudden, a red light behind me. So I pull over, and I said to the officer, I said, "Hey, believe it or not, I just came in from Texas. I'm late to go to this meeting. My friends Brian and Linda Kaminsky from LaBry are having a big convention." And he looks at me and he says, "Brian Kaminsky?" So I said, "Oh boy, I found Brian's friend." So I start off. About 5 minutes, I'm telling him all the things Brian and I have done, how long I've known him, all the things that we do. And I said, "By the way, you do know Brian. You're friends with Brian, aren't you?" He said, "No, I gave him a ticket about 10 minutes ago." So that's my morning joke. That's really not true. That's a joke. But let's see. It's 2008. I started in the aloe vera business in 1972.
Wow.
That's a long time ago. 1972 to 2008, 36 years? Wow. That's a long time. And in those 36 years, I've watched this industry grow, and I've watched it prosper, and I now see aloe vera being used in mainstream America. Matter of fact, Tuesday, I think it was, I had a wisdom tooth removed, And after they removed the wisdom tooth, the dentist put into the open socket a little gauze. But let's talk about the beauty business. Stock market went down 247 points yesterday. Foreclosures are happening all over this country, Texas included. Interest rates are coming down a little bit. The general economy is shaky. The building industry is probably close to a recession, if not in a recession. But guess what industry is still thriving? The beauty business. And remember that 36 years that I've been around this industry? I've seen a lot of slowdowns in the economic times, and always the beauty industry prospers and continues to grow. And I think in 2007, I think in the whole general cosmetic industry, the industry increased about 14 or 16%. So we're growing. So isn't it nice to be part of an industry that is almost recession-proof? Matter of fact, there's only, I think, two or three industries that went up during the Great Depression. Movie industry and I think alcohol. And guess what the third one was? Cosmetics and toiletries. Second largest industry in the world. What's the largest industry? Anybody know? No?
Tobacco?
No. Food. Food is the number one industry worldwide. But the cosmetic industry, and it counts cosmetics and toiletries, is number two. That means there's more money spent every single day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, on cosmetics and toiletries than on television sets, clothing, appliances, any other industry except for food. And you know the beautiful part about it? Is because of the efforts that Brian and Linda have done over the last 10 years, they've allowed us, all of us, to be involved in it and to prosper from it. So if you had to be sitting in a meeting room someplace today, what a great spot to be sitting right here. You know? When you get a little older like I do, you need these specs. But you know, the cosmetic industry being the second largest industry in the world, in the true meaning of the word competition, there really is no competition in the cosmetic industry. Now, let me say that again. In the true meaning of the word cosmetics, there is no competition in our field. Let me explain it. What do you think the number one cosmetic company worldwide is? Mary Kay? No. Revlon? No. Avon, somebody said it. Procter & Gamble, when you throw in toothpaste and all those things, is larger. But when you take pure cosmetic sales, Avon's still number one worldwide. And at last count, they control about 6% of the cosmetic sales worldwide. Now, didn't I just say a minute ago that the industry grows at a rate of, has been growing at a rate of about 14% a year, actually 8 to 15% a year over the last 10, 20 years? So what does that mean? It means the number one company can't even keep up with a growth rate, let alone the 100% existing business. So there's room out there for all of us. And the nice thing about the cosmetic business, people are always willing to try something new, aren't they? And if they try something they like, guess what? We got a customer. So it's penetrating. But we really must take some of that with a grain of salt. We got to fight for our customers. You know, we have to fight for every customer out there. And my definition of a customer is not a one-time sale. Somebody that you can repeat, reorder, work with that customer, and trade them into lots of different products that help them in a lot of different ways. So that's my definition of a customer. So let's look at what our competition is. In my room, I had a yellow page. Greater Milwaukee. Let's see who you're competing with. Big one, Avon. You know, I've lived in different places in the country, but I must admit, but they're a competitor of ours. You know? Let's look at another one. Mary Kay Cosmetics. Any pink Cadillacs in Milwaukee? You. Okay. But we've got to compete with Mary Kay. Vivian Woodard. We got to compete with them. Bath and Body Works. Mary's Pharmacy, Merle Norman, and then LeBry. So we got to have an edge. We got to fight for the customer, even though that we know, because we're all in the business, we know that we're better. We have to tell our customers they're better. So that's what I'm going to try to do over the next hour and a half, is try to give you, reiterate for some of the people that have been with us for a while, or some of the new folks here, give you some new insights, give you some more ammunition on what happens behind the scene, what really determines what aloe is, a good aloe and a bad aloe. And what determines a good cosmetic formulation, and what determines a Avon-type formulation, a mediocre formulation, or a Mary Kay mediocre formulation. What are the differences that are in all these different products out there, so that the next time your customer asks you a question, what makes you different and what makes LeBry different, maybe you'll remember some of the things this young man from Texas had to say here today, and it'll help you make a sale. So what I'd like to do, and we're going to kind of take this in little segments, I'd like to show you a short slide presentation, which will show you some pictures of some of the aloe farms, and it goes through some of the history of aloe, because, as you know, aloe dates back for thousands and thousands of years. And in my little slide presentation, I've got some cute little slides that'll show you some of the history of the aloe. And then after we do our slide presentation, I'm going to take somebody from the audience, and I'm going to bring them right up here on stage, and I'm going to put a white jacket on them, and I'm going to put a hairnet, and I'm going to put a mask and gloves, and we're going to take some of these big leaves of the aloe vera, and I'm going to show you how we actually fillet them and what actually happens in the filleting. And you can actually see it here. And we actually have a blender here. We're going to show you, kind of simulate what happens from taking it from the farm into a liquid substance, and then what can happen with it from there is the base of product formulation. So we got lots of things to talk about and lots of things to share. So our first slide, why aloe vera? Aloe is the name of the species. Vera in Latin means true. There are over 200 different species of aloe. The Aloe barbadensis miller is the one that we use because that is the true aloe. It's the true aloe vera. And it grows in the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, among many other places in the world. I've seen it in Australia, and I've seen it in the Caribbean, and I've seen it. Matter of fact, my house in the Riviera Maya, in my garden, I have aloe vera plants growing. You know, so it grows in any warm tropical climate. It cannot freeze. So, unfortunately, in Milwaukee, it can probably stay out half the year, three quarters of the year. But by the way, while we're kidding about those type of things, I understand that Milwaukee this year got 109 inches of snow. That's a lot of snow. That's Texas-sized snow. Okay. All right, let's move along. All right, there are some of the fields, and aloe is a constant picking process. It's not like apples or oranges or vegetables that you pick once a year or maybe twice a year. It's a picking process that happens about every 6 weeks. And probably in some of the other pictures I can show you, it's picked from the outer edge, the outer leaves, and the aloe grows this way. So it's those outer leaves that get picked, and you can see they're pretty good size. A full-grown aloe plant will have leaves that weigh 3 to 5 pounds. So there's some pretty good size aloe leaves, you know, that produce quite a bit of juice. And by the way, where is the farm? The farm is in the Rio Grande Valley area outside of a city called Brownsville. And if you look on a map, you'll see where Brownsville is. And if you're not familiar with where the Rio Grande Valley is, it's way down at the bottom tip of Texas. In the years that I've been at this, we've had 2 freezes in South Texas. So it does get cold down there every once in a while. But there are aloe fields in the Caribbean. There are aloe fields in Mexico that we have used for backup in that case. So we really have a backup plan in place just in case we do have a freeze and have to get through a short period of time without Texas aloe. This is a field of pups. It's not a cultivated field where they do the picking. You'll notice this aloe plant up here has lots of little pups that come from it, little baby aloes, and they keep working themselves out. And what happens is there are certain fields that get rotated because for the aloe to be used in products, we like to pick leaves that are between 3 and 5 years old. It has to reach its maximum potency. So We don't want to work with a smaller leaf that's not matured. So we want those leaves to be 3 to 5 years old. So there's different fields that have different purposes. How many people have an aloe plant at home? How many, now keep your hands up if you have an aloe plant that is flowering like you see here. Nobody. Well, it's okay if it's in Wisconsin, doesn't make a difference. It has to be at least 7 years old. And then it'll start to flower. And when it flowers, it's a beautiful kind of orangish, yellowish flower, and it flowers after its seventh year. You read in the literature, fillet, hand filleted. There are many different processes to remove the gel from the plant. The hardest way to do it is to fillet it. Well, the easiest way to do it is to grind it, put it in a big vat, which I'll show you a big vat in a minute. Put it in a big vat, grind it up, and then filter it. And that is what's called whole leaf aloe. And you might have heard that term in the marketplace. I am not a believer in whole leaf aloe because there's really three parts to the aloe plant. There's the green rind, there's the gel from the inside, and then there's the aloin, which is the yellow sap, which we don't want, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. So there's three parts to that plant. We really only want one. We want that clear gel. And when we talk about the history in just a little bit, the history was never talking about the green rind, this part of the plant. The history was never talking about the aloin. The history always talked about the aloe gel from the inside of the plant. So if you have a whole leafist, I've not used that word before, but it sounds pretty good, a whole leafist, and they tell you their process is better because the nutrients in an apple are in the skin. It's not in the inside, it's in the skin. In an orange, the real vitamin C is in the rind. Well, maybe so in an apple. Maybe so in an orange, but not in an aloe vera. When we get a sunburn, if we're down in the Mayan Riviera, we get a sunburn, guess what we put on our sunburn? The aloe, but what part of the aloe? The gel. I don't put that green stuff on there, the green rind. I cut that puppy open, and I rub it all over that sunburn. And if you talk to some of the locals there, they get a toothache. What do? They cut that aloe open and take a little chunk and stuff it on that hurting tooth, and all of a sudden, boom, that hurting tooth is not hurting anymore. But here, whoops, I was a little quicker. But we're actually going to fillet one in front of you today, so you'll see how it's done. This is a fillet table, and as they come across here, you'll see the next slide here is our fillet. And there's that juice and that liquid coming out. There's a close-up slide of the aloe leaf. And if you look very closely, here's the outside, here's the gel. You see these bundles that are here? That's the aloin. An aloin in higher concentrations, 20,000 parts per million, something like that, can retard the growth of new skin cells. So why in the world would you put that in a skincare product? It's also been called bitter aloes. You ever heard that? And kind of a laxative? Well, guess what they're using? Aloin. You want us to put some aloin in your Nutri-Aloe? No. So we remove it. And the count is less than 5 parts per million, which is virtually non-existent in your products. So what's in the base of your products is pure aloe vera gel. That's not a full-blown aloe, but I like that shot because it kind of gives you the... That was one of the camera folks, but it kind of gives you the idea. And again, if this was a pickable leaf, this one would be picked, and this one would be picked, and they get thrown in the aisles, and then they get loaded onto carts, and they come back into the filleting area. But it, again, works itself out. Why is it when we cut open an aloe plant and it's a gel like you saw that fillet, is it's kind of thick. And we want to use it in liquids. How does it become a liquid, you know, from this gel? Well, in these type of vats, there are grinding machines that will actually grind and break up the cellulose material that hold that gel together, and then what comes out is the pure liquid. So that's why when you cut open your aloe plant, it's got that cellulose material that holds it all together. But let's go back a few years, maybe 3,500 years. And for those of you that have looked at your website and looked at some of your literature, you know that Cleopatra used it. And Nefertiti used it. And Cleopatra actually used to take daily baths in the aloe vera. And from a picture, this was taken from a museum in, I believe it was in London, part of her tomb, that it actually tells the story here in hieroglyphics how she used to take daily baths in the aloe vera. Well documented throughout history. The Bible mentioned at least 8 or 10 different times in the Bible. Here in St. John chapter 19, verse 39, when they removed Christ's body from the cross, they wrapped it in a mixture of myrrhs and aloes. So when you get home, take a look and you'll see it mentioned. Yes, verse 39. In John. The Greeks used it. It was their medicine chest. Because aloe creates cell division. When? Huh? Because smart. That's right. But aloe creates cell division, meaning if we cut ourselves, our body naturally will heal itself, but aloe speeds up that process by creating cell division. So that's why it's been known, the burn plant, the healing plant, and that's why when you use it on a cut or a burn, it heals up in half the time. In Texas, where we have lots of horses, the ranchers love it because a Palomino pony that gets a cut or a scar from a barbed wire fence if you don't treat it properly, that pony will have a dark scar when it heals. But if they catch it early, you know, if they catch it early and pack it in aloe vera, when it heals over, no line, no scar. You know, same if you've got a cut, you know, and you want it to heal up, you know, use pure aloe on it and or the aloe jelly and it speeds that cell division up. China, the ancient Chinese, it was one of their herbal remedies. Christopher Columbus came over from the old world to the new world in what year? 1492. And in his journals, it's written, "All is well, aloes are bored." What did they use it for? Windburn, rope burn, medicine chest. Remember the 36 years I've been at this thing? In that 36 years, I've seen lots of different ingredients come along. And I've seen lots of ingredients hype disappear. You know, you might hear about something, and all of a sudden, it's not talked about too much anymore. But aloe won't go away. For one basic reason is it works. And it not only has the history that we've talked about, but it has the science behind it to prove that it works. Ancient pharmacies, an article we took a picture of, and the aloe down the bottom right-hand corner. The ancient monks used to disperse it. And then we move forward several thousand years to today. You know, you can go to a grocery store and you can buy fresh squeezed orange juice. If you have a Whole Foods store around this area, you sure could. And then you can walk right down the aisle and you can buy Tang. You know what Tang is? They're both orange drinks. Both could probably technically go on a label as orange extract, but really, what's the difference? One is the pure and one is the imitation. Okay? And that's kind of what has happened a little bit in the aloe business. And I've watched it. Remember we showed the pictures before of the fillets? Well, they get put into the drums. One drum, 155-gallon drum, weighs about 450 pounds. So it's pretty heavy. So if I was a manufacturer in New York City or in Chicago, and I wanted to get aloe vera liquid, I'm going to have to ship one drum, 450 pounds, all the way from, because it doesn't grow in New York or grow in Chicago, all the way from either Texas or Mexico or some tropical climate, and it becomes a matter of economics. So what a lot of companies have done is they freeze dry it into a powder form. And it even goes up to 200 to 1. So here's what happens. You take this drum, now a powder, and you send it to New York, and guess what the guys in New York do? A little bit in this one, a little bit in that one, a little bit in this one, a little bit in that one, a little bit in that one. And it makes 200 different drums, and we only had to ship one drum of powder. Hey, that makes business sense. But when we put that product on our skin and we want it to heal that problem that some of the stories that your customers are telling you, it wouldn't happen. Just wouldn't work. So then they tried something else. Let's concentrate. Let's do it like they do with orange juice. Instead of that fresh squeezed stuff, let's put it in a can. Probably better than the powder. And we'll concentrate it. And we'll do 10 to 1, 20 to 1. Now we'll ship one drum to New York and it'll make 20. And you see how the economics start to play into it? Well, I can stand here today and tell you the aloe in your products that you're delivering to your customers is not freeze-dried. It's not concentrated. It's not whole leaf. It's pure gel in a liquid form that has been cold processed, which we'll talk about in a second. And it's the base to your product. Wow. Talk about competing. Now, give me that Yellow Pages back. We'll get after them. Okay. So, now we've got this pure aloe. Here's what they did back in the early days. They put it in a big vat and they boiled it, pasteurized it. What happens when you boil cabbage or carrots or vegetables at home in your kitchen? What happens to the nutrition? Gone. You know, let me sidetrack a little bit. I've been working on another project for another botanical, looking into another type of botanical, and we were sending off for outside testing to an analytical lab up in Massachusetts to get an ORAC value on a particular, and we found out and reiterated that boiling really, really knocks the efficacy or the goodness out of a product. So I just reiterated again about 3 months ago in my mind of things that I knew from my experience with aloe vera. But when you boil it, you lose its goodness. The aloe comes, is cut. The aloe comes in, is filleted. The aloe is drummed off. Then there is citric acid, ascorbic acid, things to keep the pH down, and a cold process is done to it at the farms and then brought to the manufacturing facility. So, and all that happens within probably 48 hours. They say you want to work with aloe quickly within the first 72. We try to stay within 48. So we've got really good finished product. And then it's ground and then it's filtered to remove. Now in some of the processes, we leave the pulp in. You know, the pulp is if you're making a cream or a lotion, it's not so important. If you're making a toner or a freshener or something where you don't want particles showing, then you want to filter it. And that's what's happening here. And it's drummed off. There's those drums I was telling you about, weigh 450 pounds. And then it's being used again today in the entire cosmetic industry. And it is the base to the LeBri product. Okay. If a formulation has 70%, 80%, 90% aloe in it, and if a formulation has 70 or 80% water in it, which is going to be more beneficial? The aloe, obviously. So it's a start. It gets us down the right road, but it's only a start because there's many things that are involved in creating a good product. Something as simple as the correct formulation, using the correct procedures, using USP pharmaceutical grade raw materials, using botanicals that have not been adulterated, that all fit together and give us a fine, finished product. So there's other steps to this that we're going to continue talking about that take you from the raw material, the base of the product, and then we're going to start talking about what other things go in it to make it happen to be that fine, finished product that you can deliver to the customer. But guess what I need? I need a volunteer. She raised her hand first. Why don't you come right around the end? All right, what is your first name?
Vicki.
Hi, Vicki.
Hi.
Where are you from?
Houstonsburg, Wisconsin.
Why do you have all these big names in Wisconsin? My goodness. Okay. For just a few minutes, you're going to work for me.
Okay.
And here's what you're going to be required to do. First, we're going to put a jacket on you. So if you can just unbutton that and slip that on and then button it back up.
Okay.
All right. She's not going to like this. That beautiful hair has got to get covered up. I'm going to put a hairnet on you.
Okay.
Okay, now stand right over here. Let everybody take a good look at you. All right. Let me see if I got you fixed right. Okay, we're going to come right back behind the table. And we're going to slide this cutting board out to the down to the middle of the room so everybody can see really close what we're doing. I said, Brian, I said, give me a knife. I didn't say a machete. How many people have seen the movie Crocodile Dundee? And he goes out of a restaurant with his girlfriend on the streets of New York, and he gets held up. You remember this scene? And the guy comes up with a knife, and he's going to hold him up, and his girlfriend says, they have a knife. And the crocodile says, that's not a knife. That's a knife. Okay. Next thing we have is a cheese slicer. And the type we use are very similar to what you're seeing right here. All right. And we're going to go right over to this beautiful aloe plant. And I promised Linda that since I was cutting her aloe plant, I would send her up some nice ones for her office. So if you can bring that carefully over here and don't trip and fall. And since this plant has been kind of growing in lots of different directions, not the typical one like you saw, we're just going to try to pick a couple of the biggest leaves we can find. But typically, if we were doing it at the farm, we would be picking those outer leaves. So I kind of like this leaf. So if we can get in that right in there and cut that leaf right off.
Right there?
Yeah.
It's easy.
Cuts pretty easy, doesn't
it? Yeah, it does.
Okay, let's pick another nice big one. That looks like a good one right there.
Right about here?
Yep. All right. Okay. Now, let's go back over to the table. Who's got a napkin or a white piece of paper? A napkin right there? Let me show you something. Do it on the white part. Alloin. Did you see what I did? I just touched it. Alloin. All right, we're going to take one at a time. We'll take this one first. And right about here, we'll cut it again. Right about there. Okay. Then we're going to take the cheese slicer, and we're going to start at the top here, and we're just going to go inside that, and we're going to go right on down all the way and just cut that edge off. Just kind of...
Okay.
The sides, where the knobs, little bumps are. That's great. Now, I tell you what, if you can do that same thing to that one, I'm going to show the group what I've got here. And all we did is try to take off the the two edges. And then we're going to fillet it just like we fillet a fish. Actually, in this process, we're not taking the alloin. Okay. So what we're actually going to get a little alloin in our little process here. When we first started finding a way to get the alloin out, we noticed when we cut the aloe plant open and we let it sit like this upside down, it would drain itself out. But it took a while. By the time you had tables and tables and tables of upside down aloe plants lined up, it took a long time. So we found a way to chemically do it. If you want to do it at home, just set it upside down; it'll drip out. All right, how are we doing? All right, what I'm going to ask you to do now is to just fillet this like you would fillet a fish. Just go ahead and take that top layer off, just kind of like what I'm just doing right here. Okay. You can do that to the other one. And by the way, the question always comes up, do we use fertilizers? Are the plants organically grown? Okay. But the answer is yes, the fields are organically grown. Okay. Now we're going to go along the bottom. And just like you would fillet a fish, we're going to go right on down along. Well, why would they do it? Because they probably don't know any better, and they have been instructed by their corporate office to control cost. And not so much as a filler, but to control cost. Yeah, if we can just grind all this up and just pour it off into a little beaker, that's a whole bunch easier than what we're doing right here, isn't it? No, they're not getting rid of the alloy either. So, again, in high concentrations, retards the growth of new skin cells. It's not quite as...
I did it all myself.
Now, what's holding that together? What's making that a gel?
Cellulose.
Right on in. All right, and I'm going to hit blend. And, you know, normally it would be a lot easier if it was all the way full, but let's see. Who's got an empty glass? As it start, as the foam is starting to go down, our foliar left a little bits and pieces of the leaf. And we're not quite as clear as we'd like to be, because we've got a little alloy in there. But I think you get the point. And again, once that foam settles down, we'll take a look at it a little bit later. Okay, come on back around front. Right here in the front. Now take a bow and then take your jacket off.
There you are.
All right, great. And would you do me a favor as you go back to your seat?
Hairnet. Oh, hairnet. Kind of got used to that.
As you go back to your seat, would you give this lab jacket to Linda as a present from me?
Okay.
And would you give her these too, just in case she wants to ever do a demonstration like this in the office?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Is that pretty much what we get in our pure aloe jelly too? Pretty much what you just did, but they don't add.
Well, in your aloe jelly, there are emulsifiers,
okay,
that make it a gel. And I think that we use Carbapol. I think Carbomer, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's Carbomer that makes it a gel. And so that is what makes that very thick. So it's not this form that you're seeing here. That's correct. That's it. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I believe that formula is about 98% aloe, I believe. You know. So if you got a cut or a burn, yes. Sure. You know, the only thing is you're going to have a little alloy in there, and a little bit of the green rind, since we've not totally got it out. But sure, that's drinkable. What does it taste like? Cucumber juice. You know, it's just a natural place. Yes?
When you talked about the freeze-dried and the concentrated, do they have to put that on the label? And if they do, what is it?
That's the whole point. So the point is, what I'm trying to tell you and where I'm going with all this, you got them. You got them. All we got to do, once you've got all this confirmed in your head And I, like anybody else, I have to 100% believe. When I 100% believe, watch out. Here I go. So once you understand and you believe, and it's not me telling you, and it's not Linda telling you, and Brian telling you, it's your customers telling you that this is what's happening, and this is what's happening, and this is what's happening. Okay, let's go on to the next step. And I want to kind of let you envision some of the things that happened behind the scenes. The aloe is then brought in to the manufacturing facility. And the farms and the manufacturing facility are two distinct different areas. They're not in the manufacturing facility is not in the Rio Grande Valley. So it's in two distinct different areas. We have at the manufacturing facility approximately 110 employees. And we have approximately 50,000 square feet of manufacturing capability. We have very high speed machines that can run fast and furious. But kind of some of the steps that come through. And at the facility, besides the manufacturing area, we have two laboratories inside the building. We have a micro lab, and we have an R&D lab. And Linda normally spends most of her time in the R&D lab. That's where product development happens. You know, Brian spends most of his time in the micro lab to make sure that we don't have contamination or problems at all in the products. So there are two distinct different functions of both of those labs. But raw materials come into the building. If you look on the back of your labels, you'll see some products might have 15 items. Some might have 20 different items. And I'll let you in on a little secret. And this is something that very few people will ever tell you. There are three grades of raw materials. There is industrial grade. There is cosmetic grade. And then there's USP pharmaceutical grade. Just like you go to the gas pumps out front. Three different grades, three different prices. Guess which one costs the most? The pharmaceutical grade. Guess what's in your product? Not only the great aloe vera, but USP pharmaceutical grade raw materials, 100%. What makes something USP grade? Meaning, it has to meet a certain criteria. It has to be refined to meet a certain, just like high-test gas, has to have a certain criteria. And when trucks pull up to the factory and unload drums of raw material, they go into a quarantine area. And a quarantine area has items that have been currently received. And somebody there checks it in. It gets registered into a logbook. Okay? A sample is then taken of that raw material. I don't care if it's pharmaceutical grade or not. A sample is taken of that raw material in a little vial and then carried into the micro lab. And our microbiologist, she'll test that raw material for yeast, fungus, and mold. Make sure there's no contamination in that raw material. And once it meets her specs, then she'll send green tags back that say approved. And then that drum gets a green sticker and says approved. And then it can be brought into the raw material area. Okay? So it has to meet specs before it even gets in. So it's been checked, and it's been triple checked. Then Brian places an order. Brian wants Hello Jelly, or he wants eye cream, or he wants facial peel. And a formula goes back into manufacturing with a batch sheet. And there's two columns on that batch sheet to the left. And on the right, it shows the weights. 42 pounds of this raw material, 38 pounds of this raw material, 12 pounds of... just like a recipe at home in your kitchen. First column goes to a weigh area. The guy weighs out the 42 pounds, put it in a sanitary container. It gets set aside until everything in that batch is put together onto a pallet, moved into a staging area. He's checked it. Then, when the compounders in our where you mix it, where the big mixing vats are, when the compounders need it, ready to do their next batch, in comes that pallet that's got all this pre-weighed out raw material. And what are they going to do? They're going to check the weights again. So if there's supposed to be so much vitamin C, we want to make sure that two people have seen that vitamin C go into that formulation. And then the product is actually physically made and then drummed off and then moved off to the filling department where it's filled into the containers and packaged and shipped. But as it comes down the filling line, you can kind of see, and you know, we kind of talked about this at dinner last night. We might maybe even someday have a little sightseeing thing, but I don't know if that's possible or not, but that everybody could come see, or we could do some filming or something like that. But as it comes down the lines, the assembly lines, boom, 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 and something is taken from the beginning of the batch, a finished product is taken from the beginning batch of the batch, a finished product is taken from the end of the batch, and if it's a long run, something from the middle. And guess where it goes? Back into the micro lab. Yes, everything's been checked and triple checked and quadruple checked, but she wants to check it one more time. And she's going to check it again for any contamination, any yeast, fungus, or mold. Okay. So when it gets boxed and shipped and it arrives to the warehouse, Brian's warehouse, and it gets shipped to your customer, the chances of something ever going amiss are highly unlikely. And those of you that have been around for a long time, you'll know that. Product consistency is terrific, good. Product performance is good because of all the procedures that happen behind the scenes. Okay? We have three licenses. By the way, I'm a member of the CTFA, the Cosmetic Toiletries and Fragrance Association, Washington, D.C. We are members of the Independent Cosmetic Manufacturers Association, the member of Society of Cosmetic Chemists. We have all the credentials and all the shingles. But everything that we do, you know, is checked and triple checked and triple checked. So we have three licenses. One is licensed to manufacture cosmetics. Second, licensed to manufacture food. And that would the Nutrala would fall into that category. And third would be our over-the-counter drug license. Acne preparations, sunscreens, topical anesthetic products. So those fall into those categories. And who are we governed by? Well, in Texas, we have a very strict health department. So we get visits from the health department all the time. And we're also inspected by the FDA. So all of those credentials and all of those things put together don't make it 100% bulletproof, as they would say in Texas, but makes it pretty doggone pure. I wonder if competition B does that. Mary Kay use aloe in their products? Merle Norman? But Mary Kay, even Avon, uses some botanicals, don't they? This doesn't stop. It gets better. It gets better. Okay, you're me. You got to buy cucumber extract. Where do you buy it? Find somebody that makes cucumber extract and buy it from them. You got to buy chamomile. You got to find a supplier someplace that has a factory that specializes in chamomile. We don't. We started 8 years ago buying the flowers, buying the bark, buying the roots. And we process that chamomile or those botanicals in place in our facility. Why? Several years ago, I had a chemist to work for me that used to work for one of the largest botanical suppliers in the country. And he told me what they did. They'd make that cucumber extract and then they'd cut it 10 to 1. And by the time it got to me, I'm not really getting pure cucumber extract. I said, whoa, let's wait. I'm not interested in making money on the botanical or the cucumber extract. I want efficacy. How do we do it? So we started 8 years ago. So when you look at your label and you see the different botanicals on there, there's a difference. And I promise you, in most cases, 10 to 1 difference. We got punch. Besides that, no mineral oil, no waxes. Go down to Bath and Body Works, pull a product off the shelf. Mineral oil, petrol atom, waxes, alcohols, FD&Cs. So we can compete. In the 36 years that I've been doing this, I've been on all sides of the business. You know, I've seen the marketing side, done exactly what it is that you're doing, been on the manufacturing side, been on the farming side. I've seen all sides of the business. You got it. And, you know, I asked Brian yesterday, I said, Brian, what's happening down in Chicago? He said, oh, we got a few people going. Oh, my goodness, it's an hour away. That'll be a bunch of people going. With these kind of products and this story to tell and we're involved in the beauty business, hey, I don't care what, I do care. I don't care what gasoline price go to. I do care. The home building industry, I really care, but it's not affecting our livelihoods. You know. So here we go. And we march on the path. And what will happen as we march into 2008, into the third and fourth quarters, we will start to see the economic times change a little bit. And as we get into 2009, hopefully we're back growing again. But even when we're growing, the beauty business continues. And especially our industry. Because direct sales is the backbone of this country. You know, they were talking the other day about the truckers going on strike. Did you read that up here? Diesel fuel is now $5 a gallon. By the way, diesel fuel is a waste product of gasoline. And for years, it always used to be much less expensive than gasoline. Now it's more expensive than gasoline. So I don't blame the truckers for being upset. They're being hit. But if the salespeople of the United States went on strike for one day, it would cripple our economy. Because nothing moves in our economy until something is sold. Our girl that works on the filling line or somebody that works on the fillet station doesn't have a job unless products are sold and things move through. So sales is the backbone of our economy. Something has to be sold and then the ripple effects on down through. So that summarizes a little bit in the last hour and a half. That hour and a half went pretty quick. I know we didn't have a lot of time to answer a lot of questions, but I understand that I'm going to be having lunch with the executive managers. Is that right?
Right.
And I'm sure that we'll be talking about lots of things, and they'll be sharing some of the things that they learn at our lunch a little further. Well, the bottom line is it's been a pleasure. Thank you. And to Brian and Linda, may you have another 10 years of good success. Okay.
Thank you, Doug. That was spectacular. Now, I've been telling you all along, we have the best. And now you met the man that has been behind some of the things that we've done at LeBry Pure Natural. I call him our guiding light. You know, he's the man with the knowledge, and he was really able to capture our dream and bring it to fruition, and that is why we are here today. So thank you, Doug. Thank you so much. Outstanding.